So one area where I use it a lot, the animal communication, is end of life transition, because I find it's really important to let people know what the animal is actually thinking about whether it's time to go or not. So a lot of people suffer with that decision making. Okay, when is it time to go? And there's a huge pressure in this country to end the life when it becomes at all uncomfortable. We're not used to being around old and sick and dying. It's kind of hidden from society. It's considered cruel to let your pet die a natural death if they are debilitated. However, whenever I tune into animal that the owner's considering to put down, none of them are willing to die. And I've seen, the really sick animals that, by the Western standards would be considered like very good candidate for euthanasia. Maybe they can't get up, or they cannot eat, or maybe they have ongoing illness that makes them suffer. However, they still want to take that next breath.
Welcome to the Pet Care Report podcast by Pet Summits. Here's your natural cat healthcare host, Dr. Megan Barrett.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for joining us once again. Today, we have a very special guest, Dr. Yushinka. She is a veterinarian with a lifelong passion for animals and medicine, who has always embraced home diets and natural remedies for pets. She quickly transitioned to holistic veterinary practice after moving to Canada and becoming recertified in 2007. Currently based in Hawaii, Dr. Yushinka runs her veterinary practice, Path of Bliss Hawaii, offering holistic consultations, herbal and homeopathic treatments, and animal communication. So welcome, doctor. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Mahalo. Thank you, Megan, for having me.
Yeah, definitely. It's very exciting to have another vet from Hawaii on the show. It feels like you're close.
Feels like we're at home, right?
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so we will be talking about some different topics today, but the main one will be animal communication, since that is one of Dr. Yushinka's expertise, fields of expertise. And so before we get started with that, though, I do just want to ask you about if you have cats of your own and how you support them with a holistic lifestyle.
I do have two cats, which we adore, and we got them completely by surprise. It's a great story. So I was at the beach with my children, and there was a lady walking by with a carrier, and it's covered with a towel. And I was like, oh, what's in the carrier? You know, at a time we had a guinea pig, and I was looking for a second guinea pig to keep company. And she said, oh, I have kittens. So she had this like teeny baby kittens that she found on the side of the road, abandoned, newborn, and she's nursing them, but she can't keep them. And she's like, I don't know what to do with those kittens. And she said, everybody wants kittens, but I don't know if they're going to take a good care of those kittens. And I said, I'll take the kittens. And we brought them home. So we came home with a carrier and the kittens. That was it. And I started them right off the bat on the raw food diet. They were about, maybe 6 weeks old. And it's interesting. First, they had like a cleansing reaction. When I gave them the food first time, they got vomiting and diarrhea. And I was like, oh my God, that's making them sick. But immediately it improved and their health just like blossomed. So I've been cooking for them ever since. I'm really laid back about cooking. Like, I don't necessarily follow any ratios or procedures. I'm like, okay, a little bit of meat, a little bit of starch, a little bit of vegetables, this is it. And so whatever I have at home, so I want people to know that it's super simple to cook for your pets. The same like for you, you don't measure the proper ratio every time you eat, how much phosphorus are you getting today, how much calcium you got yesterday. You just eat variety of foods. So it's the same for your pets. Just give them variety. Their body will absorb what it needs. When I was born in Ukraine, we actually didn't have the pet food. So I'm like one of those rare people that existed without the pet food industry. And, the animals thrived. The animals lived a long, healthy, happy lives. They're not spayed and neutered. They're not vaccinated. They didn't have a flea prevention. And they're fed, what's considered table scraps. And they lived into, 18 years old of age, no joint problems, like very, very mobile. So it's inspirational, to see and share with people, because what I'm seeing in North America is epidemic of the chronic disease. The animals in their 7 of 8 years old are considered geriatric or old because they're just getting so sick. So I'm like, something we're doing wrong with our pets. Let's just review, you know, and maybe do things differently.
Yeah, I agree. What do you think could be some of the biggest things we're doing wrong to contribute to that epidemic?
The food is number one. You know, I'm a big nutritionist advocate for humans. Like, my own health improved when I changed my diet. And, you know, it's something you put in your body daily, day after day after day. And the more I learn about it, the more I understand how it works. So the body produces oxidative stress when it digests the food. So the body expects antioxidants to come with food. And the main, you know, one of the main flaws of commercial food is lacking antioxidants, because by the very fact that it's processed, it's a kibble, you know, it's a canned food, it's dead food, you know, it's been processed under pressure and heat. So it doesn't have antioxidants. So you create oxidative stress with every meal. So no wonder the diseases that we see, that are oxidative stress diseases. There's, you know, there's cancers, there's chronic diseases, arthritis, there's inflammation, the skin problems. The food is number one. Then definitely over vaccination, you know, there's unnecessary, like, even, you know, every 3 years vaccine is not scientific. You know, I challenge it every single time when the vets tell me, oh, we follow the Western science protocol. I'm like, wait a minute. You know, there's no science telling there's need for a vaccine every 3 years. And then, you know, toxic flea mans on top of that, and early spay neuter, and you got the cocktail for sickness.
Yeah.
So what I tell people, if you follow the standard recommendation of feeding commercial food, spay neuter, put in the flea mats, and vaccinate your pet, you get sick pet. You know, like, if it was the other way around, I'll say hey for the medicine, but it's not.
Yeah. Sadly, if all of those things were working the way that they were supposed to be, then we wouldn't have a lot of sick pets like we do.
And exactly.
The rate of sickness just going up and up and up more and more.
Yeah, it's time to step back and say, wait a minute, something is not working here. We're not seeing the healthy pet we're supposed to see by using all these methods we're told it's going to work.
Definitely. I think it comes from a place of, we're trying to do the right thing, but it's just clearly not working. So clearly we have to return to some of our older ways of doing things and be a little more minimalist and natural.
Yes, but I think the average veterinarian, they're so busy working day-to-day cases, they don't even have time to step back and see the whole picture. Plus, the industry is trying really hard not to show you the whole picture, right? It's like you've been ridiculed for questioning things. You've been, you know, told that you're not scientific. I just recently learned a term, scientism. When the science has been used to promote corporate interests, it's no longer science. You know, when you cannot question the status quo, it's no longer science. And it's, I think so many veterinarians are questioning, and so many listeners are here because things are not working out, and we got to do a different things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's hard to talk about holistic health for cats and not circle right back into nutrition. So I'm glad we got to touch on that first. So I would love to talk to you about animal communication, because I know that's one of your areas of expertise, and it's a very fascinating topic. So can you explain how it works as a tool for identifying illness in pets, and how you've used it?
Yes. You know, if somebody told me 20 years ago I'm going to be an expert in animal communication, I would have laughed my head off, because I was raised very critical thinking, very, you know, and then very physical world, you know, things, whatever I can touch, it's the only thing that exists. Yes, absolutely. You know, like, my parents, you know, were, you know, in a communist country, you know, anything like it all metaphysical was, you know, was out of question. And even animal communication was always far, and it still is, it's so far off, you know, it's something that's like, it's like homeopathy, you know, like you know it works, but you don't know exactly how it works. So when I first heard of animal communication from a friend, I was sure they're getting tricked. I was like, I'm sure somebody's just telling you stories that kind of sound like, you know, they're believable, and they're probably not. But she says, no, there's no way for that person to know, like, how my horse, you know, relates to the horse next to her. Like, it's like, no way. And I was like, huh, interesting. Like, I started getting goosebumps. I'm like, wow, that's something to it. And to me, it happened completely unexpected. So I was working on the dogs about 3 years ago. It's very recent, actually. So I was working on the dog. I was doing massage. So I was like, I came to owner's house. I put a good music on. I was doing this deep healing massage on the dog. And all of a sudden, there's like this images start popping up. And I was like, oh, what is that? So the image popped up of the dog being a puppy with her mom. And the feeling was of the dog missing her mom. I was like, wow. That's and sadness came up. I was like, I never felt anything like that before. I was like, that's interesting. And then the next image, and then I found another spot on her body was really tense. And all of a sudden that image comes up of her playing with a big brown dog that's a little rough, and she's scared of the dog. So I didn't know what to make out of it because I didn't knew that pet at all. So after I finished massage, I came to the owner and I said, you know, I don't know what it is, but this is what I'm seeing when I was doing massage on your dog. And she said, well, you know, she was taken away from her mom really early to be trained as a service dog. So, you know, it makes perfect sense. And she's been transferred homes over and over again as a puppy. So it makes sense that she might be missing her mom. And then the neighbors had the big brown dog that she used to play with that she loved, but also was a little scared of because the dog was bigger and stronger. I was like, wow, that's interesting. You know? So I kind of had affirmation, you know, when it started happening, the owner affirmed that I was not making it up or I was being crazy. And then the second dog that I worked on from the same family, she just wanted to talk about food, you know. So I'm like massaging the dog. All of a sudden, this images of food start popping up. So there's green beans, you know, and beef and egg omelet, and then vanilla ice cream. I was like, why there's vanilla ice cream? This is like, and then and now I'm feeling a little more confident. I'm telling the owner, hey, you know, and she says, oh, she had green beans for breakfast today, and she really likes beef. And on Sunday, we make her omelet and she just lives for it. And I'm like, but what about the ice cream? And the owner says that she used to have an ice cream shop in Waikiki and she would feed this vanilla ice cream to her dog. And the dog still remembers it and she just loves it. And I was like, that's just, you know, insane. It's just totally insane. I remember coming to my work and telling my colleague, I was like, I can hear the dogs now. I don't know what's going on. I can hear the animals. And she's like, wow, that's interesting. You know, like normal people reactions, like, oh, no, that's a little weird. Whatever. And then after that, I started like listening. And when I felt it was appropriate, sharing with the owners. And so I'll tell you my cat stories, you know, because there's a cat podcast. So one of the first time, remember, that striking information came from the cat. I came to see a cat with an upset stomach. The cat is being fed, you know, homemade diet, this raw food, organic, like it's good as it gets. You know, it has also an old kind of herbal supplements, super holistic owner. I'm like, you know, should not be. And the cat is down, like really sick with vomiting, diarrhea, really sore stomach, like pancreatitis case. And I said, that's, you know, that's unusual given that such a good diet you have for your pet. And then I started tuning in. Now I know how it is. Like I closed my eyes and I started scanning the body of a pet. Just in my mind, I was like, do I feel any areas of like stagnation? It feels like a stagnant energy. And I was like, oh, there's a lot of stagnation in the abdominal area. You know, I can feel it. This like dark, dark space. And I decided to ask the owner, well, how are you feeling? And she says, well, I'm feel like I'm about to throw up. I was like, well, that's interesting. Turns out, so the owner's boyfriend just recently moved back in. She doesn't like him. She doesn't know how to end the relationship. And she's internalizing it in her stomach, literally making herself sick. Well, the cat is, you know, is picking on her energy. The way it works, you know, if you're feeling sick, your animals are going to start feeling sick in a similar ways. And I told her, well, I think it's possible that he's feeling your stress and then making him unwell. And she said immediately she's going to kick the boyfriend out, like the very same day. She said she couldn't do it for herself, but she would do anything for her cat. So if it's making her cat sick, off goes the boyfriend. And the cat gets better and she's feeling much happier. And it was just this little, the little insight that helped her move in the right direction. So what I see a lot of the time is animals, they just want you to be happy. So if you're not, if you're suffering and you're holding back in some areas, they can manifest it like a next level stronger and get sicker just to show you that you need to move on. So another case I had from the Big Island was over Zoom. So the lady contacted me and she said her cat became aggressive. Like all of a sudden, was super friendly cat, and now he's biting her guests. So she runs Airbnb. She has people coming, and all of a sudden her cat is just attacking the guests. And it's very embarrassing, and she has liability, and she's like, what am I going to do? And I tune in, you know, ask all the questions, what's happening with the cat? And then I ask the owner, well, how are you feeling? And she says, I feel like I want to bite somebody. I was like, that's very interesting. And then I was like, why is that? You know? And then she works for the tourist company on the boat as a guide. And she's over the job and she doesn't like it. And there's some conflict. And she feels like she cannot quit. So she's really angry with the situation. You know, she can't quit and she's suffering. I was like, well, you know, possibly your emotions, you know, are getting picked up by the cat. So if you're walking around feeling angry, so imagine like you live in the house with the kids, for example, you come home angry, your kid's going to start getting agitated. So if you have a pet, you come home angry, they're going to start feeling that energy and start, you know, like having to release it in their own ways. So we talked to the owners and she made a decision just to quit the job in the months because, you know, what to wait for, you know, just, and the cat got better, you know, the cat just improved, you know, because there was nothing more to be angry about. So this, it's once you start digging into it, it's fascinating to see the connection. You know, and the more in tune you are, the deeper the messages that the cats can tell you.
It's like animals are teachers and they come into your life to teach you a lesson.
They're profound teachers and they're so deeply connected to the spirit, to the love and to goodness. And they want you to be happy and they don't want you to hold back and they don't want you to suffer and they don't want you to be in a relationship you're not happy or they don't want you to hold back if you like somebody and you're just scared to get in. You know, they do want you to take to the next level where you are thriving. So one area where I use it a lot, the animal communication, is end-of-life transition. Because I find it's really important to let people know what the animal is actually thinking about whether it's time to go or not. So a lot of people suffer with that decision-making, okay, when is it time to go? And there's a huge pressure in this country to end the life when it becomes at all uncomfortable. We're not used to being around old and sick and dying. It's kind of hidden from society. It's considered cruel to let your pet die a natural death if they are debilitated. However, whenever I tune into animal that the owner's considering to put down, none of them are willing to die. And I've seen, you know, like really sick animals that, you know, by the Western standards would be considered like very good candidate for euthanasia. You know, maybe they can get up or they cannot eat, or maybe they have ongoing illness that makes them suffer. However, they still want to take that next breath. If they can take the next breath, they would rather do it than die. So I want to give that permission to the people that want to go ahead and let their pet, you know, complete their journey naturally, to tell them that's okay. They're not being cruel. And, if they feel conflicted about euthanasia, it's probably because it doesn't feel right internally. You know, if you get to the point where it feels like a good decision, it's probably is. If it doesn't feel like a good decision, probably isn't. So just discard anybody else's opinion about how things should be done and just trust yourself. I've had owners that went through the whole journey with a pet, like not eating for a whole month. And dying, you know, like in their hands, looking in their eyes. It was extremely profound, beautiful spiritual experience. And it would not have been that way if the dog would just put down. You know, it would be like a quicker transition against the animal's will. Like, I do believe they have a right to complete their journey on their own. One time I had a case when I was called for the house call euthanasia for a cat that was a 17-year-old cat, emaciated, just skin and bones, seizuring. And recently broke his leg, you know, had a violent seizure, hit the steps, you know, has his broken leg. The owner says, okay, maybe, you know, it's time for euthanasia. I come in and the cat is purring. The cat is just purring and like rubbing me and like showing me so much how he wants to live that I told them, well, I cannot put the cat down. He wants to live. And I didn't. And I told her how to do the pain management and seizure control and how to stabilize the leg. And she called me a few months later and said, hey, he's doing better. she's so glad she didn't put him down. He actually starts feeling better. So this end of life transition, you know, having somebody that can tune in with your pet is very helpful, because it's such a, or having the support of a veterinarian that can guide you step by step through that process is very, very helpful.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think when I was a kid, I always thought if I had a superpower, I'd want it to be animal communication, because you know, now it would make my job so much easier to be able to just ask them how they feel, or, you know, where does it hurt?
Well, we all have that capacity, you know, it just the ability. It's like learning how to ride the bike. You just get it. So the key is you have to be still enough to hear that. So the first is stillness. So if somebody wants to start learning it, I would say start meditating and calming your mind, and then staying calm in the presence of the animal. So once you're calm enough, you're inevitably going to start picking up those informations. And the second step is believing. So if you hear something, you don't know how to explain it, start writing it down and start carefully asking the owners or seeing yourself in your workup if it actually adds up. So that and the more you practice this, the more confident you're going to get. I just recently found out there's actually the technique that teaches you to be a psychic. I thought it just like spontaneously happened to people, but there was this man named Jose Silva that developed a mind control methods. Maybe you've heard of it. It's on the Mind Valley, so it's a method of putting yourself in a meditative state through the body relaxation, where you're relaxed enough that you're accessing this subconscious states of mind in which you're seeing those, in which you're developing the psychic abilities. You start seeing with your psychic brain. So he trained thousands of people. First they put the trainees into this relaxed state, and then they tell them the name and the age of the person and where they live. And the person, you know, starts describing, you know, the physical conditions. So it's possible, it's trainable. It would imagine how easy the diagnostics are, right? When the pet comes in, you just scan it in your brain, say, aha, I'm going to look there. There's where the problem is. So I had a patient that came in, and I felt the belly and I felt the liver was enlarged. I'm like, the liver does not feel right, you know? And they sent him for x-rays, and the radiologist said, oh, nothing wrong with the liver, just a little enlarged, put him on the, you know, milk thistle. And it comes back and it started getting worse. And then I tune in, do the communication with the pet, and she says, I have a tumor, you know, tumor in my liver, you know, there's a tumor in my liver. And I sent him back and I say, we got to do ultrasound, you know, there's a problem there. And I do ultrasound, there's a massive tumor in the liver that got, you know, like just overlooked. And then, you know, that helped us to narrow things down so we're not struggling to figure out what's going on. You know, that was just very clear. You know, that I know there's some human doctors that have the capacity, you know, or mediums, you know, they can pinpoint where the problem is, so you can start looking. So rather than just shooting, you know, in the dark and having like the way we're trained in Western medicine can be this and that and that and that and that, rather than using intuition, no, I think it's that.
Yeah, I think we've become so reliant on that. Whereas before we had all these medical diagnostic tests,
yeah,
that's what healers had to do, is be intuitive. And, you know, how did they do any veterinary medicine before the 21st century? Before we had lab work and ultrasounds, they had to do more intuitive and observational diagnostic work.
And it's funny, it's almost happened by necessity with me, because so I'm here in this rural Kauai, you know, pretty much a village. And in my office, I just have a centrifuge and I work with a lab on the mainland. So I don't have extra ultrasound. So it became like I had to work in those like old time healers. Like all I have is my hands, and the owners come in. Sometimes they say, well, I can't afford the x-ray and the ultrasound in the bigger hospital. I just have this money for an appointment. Help me with what you got. So I have to figure stuff out just with this minimum, just with observation. But I spend time with the patients. For example, it was my own son. I went to the hospital recently, and they don't even do an exam. You know, like I go in an exam room, they ask me questions, they write me a prescription. They don't even touch the patients. You know, I spend my time.
Yeah, you might see the doctor for 5 minutes.
See him for 5 minutes. You're just like a number, you know. It's like, oh, this is a symptom. There's a drug. Off you go. You know, and there's so much is missed. You know, and that's how the modern veteran medicine is set up. You know, so I'm interviewing now for clinics on Oahu, and they tell me, oh, the appointment is 15 minutes. It's in and out for vaccines. I'm like, wait a minute. I spend an hour in each case, you know, because I want to get to know the patient. I want to know what's happening. I want to know what the cause of the sickness, rather than just being on the treadmill of dispensing medicine, you know, which is really profitable. However, it doesn't benefit our patients.
Do you ever do work with a pendulum for communication?
Not for the patients. You know, for myself, I do. It's a double-edged sword, the pendulum, because what the pendulum does, it will tell you what your field is in the moment. So whatever you think subconsciously is the right answer, it will tell you that, but it doesn't mean it is necessarily the right answer. It will just respond to your own field. So I've had it like, I feel good about this minute, it will spin it yes, and the next minute I feel bad about it, it will spin no. It just reflects your field, so don't think it has like an outside power, it's beside yourself. Like, it just reflects, so what do you think?
Yeah, when I was a kid too, we had an animal communicator come to our farm, and he worked on all the horses. His name was Bill Northern. He was like this older guy from, I think, New Zealand, and he kind of was like, had this wizard vibe about him, and he worked with a pendulum. And I know he's done divining, and you know, he's a very like a master animal communicator. He could help people find their pets from a distance if they got lost, and he could tell them, you know, where to find them. So that was my first exposure to an animal communicator. And I think what he told me when he worked with me and my horse was that I was too intense, and my horse wanted me to be less intense in working with him. And I remember it changing our relationship, because, you know, I treated him with a little bit more, you know, gentleness after that. And he's still, you know, around now. He's 26 years old. And I think it was a big part of that, just having that small amount of feedback that just comes from the heart of the animal. So those things can be really valuable.
Oh, it can change people's lives. Like, literally, it can change people's lives. You know, yeah, as you said, just that small feedback, right? I had a case when I came to the owner again for the end of life, and she dug a grave for her dog already. So I'm coming to see the dog, and she dug a grave. And I see the dog, and I start talking to the dog, and the dog is nowhere near wanting to die. Like, the dog says she wants to go to Europe, she wants to go to California, she wants to, you know, the owner changed her job and like find a new house. Like, she's, and what turns out, like, the owner buried her, like figuratively buried herself in that grave with her dog. She kind of given up on her life. You know, she felt like there was nothing left for her. Things are not working out, you know, and she gave up on her dog and herself. And after that session, she just came out and she just laid out in her driveway, like spread out on the ground. And she said, I feel free. And now she tells everybody after she sees the vet, her life, you know, is much better. You know, it's like it can give that inspiration. It's like, hey, you can be good. You know, you can live a happy life. You can, you know, you can do good things. You matter. Like,
it's just in another way that animals can be our therapy helpers and guides.
Yes. If you look deeper, there's so much to it. And they can go in the details. You know, how do animals tell me? It's like, oh, you should go see this grandma, but not that grandma. You should be in the city because that feeds you, or you should be more remote because you're better in the jungle. It's like they know exactly, you know, what's going on. I was like, that person is not good for you, that's good for you, or we should be moving to a new country, or we should be staying here. It's like they have very precise ideas about what needs to happen and what the best thing is. And we do too, but we just don't trust it, or we don't believe that we deserve happiness. You know, we just hold back while they don't hold back. They're like, that feels good, let's just do it.
Yeah. So they're like our family members, so they know us just as well as we know ourselves, or maybe even better.
I feel like they, you know, I just recently had this realization, the animals are even closer to us than family members, because they're us. You know, our pet is part of, like, it's something we perceive as part of ourselves. you know, they're so close to us. You know, with family members, it's a different person that can be really close to you, but still, you know, it's a different person. Well, your pet is just you, you know, it's just like this part of you that you want to cuddle and love. And, you know, it gives you that unconditional acceptance. You know, they don't care if your hair is not made or if you lost your job, you know, they just love you as it is.
Yeah, that's the best part.
And one thing I want to, it's going to be my takeaway message is, I want to release a feeling of guilt from pet parents. If there's one thing, you know, I can tell the pet parents is like, please, you know, don't feel like you need to feel guilty about not being enough for your pet, not doing enough for them, or you know, putting them down too early, or not feeding them the best food. The guilt is not something that your pet is experiencing. You know, they don't feel any anger or expectation towards you, you know, not being 100% perfect 100% of the time. You're just doing your best, you know, just drop it. I feel like the best pet owners feeling the most guilt, you know, the more they try, the more they feel like they're not enough. They're trying the best supplements, the best food and the acupuncture and this, and they still feel like I'm not enough. I'm not doing enough for my pet. That's not how your pet feels. They feel like you're enough. You know, and the, ironically, what I find, you know, if the owners are laid back, they might not even be feeding, you know, the perfect food to their pets, or they might not be, you know, following the perfect schedule. The pet tend to be healthier. You know, if there's a relaxed feeling, you know, in the house, your parent is going to be that much happier. So follow your own happiness. You know, you matter. Your happiness matters. So if you want your pet to be healthy, focus on things that make you happy and healthy, and they will reflect that. So don't neglect your own needs because you're so focused on making everything right for your pet. But do something for yourself. You know, go for a massage. You know, go for acupuncture. Make yourself that extra meal. And then the pet says, oh, hi, I feel so good in the house. I'm like, you know, my mom or my dad is taking care of themselves. So the self-care, self-love, self-acceptance will help to improve the health of the pets.
Yeah, I think that's a great tip and so easily forgotten when we're obsessing about being perfect.
Yeah, the obsession with details and perfection, you know, it's permeating, you know, it's kind of infiltrating the best intentions. You want to do the best, but you get so carried away that you forgot. The end results, you want to feel good and you want your pet to feel good.
Yeah. And have good quality time with your pets. That's all they want, I think.
Yeah. And if you're feeling happy, you can't hide anything from your pet. You know, if you have an ache, they're going to know and they're going to want to help you and they want to try to take it away from you by like absorbing the energy from you. They say, oh, you know, I'll take it from you. Like, please don't suffer. Please don't suffer. So address your own suffering. For the benefit of your pet's health.
Yeah. If you don't do it for yourself, do it for your pets, as you said earlier.
Kick out that person that's making you upset. Leave the job. Find a place where you're happy. And guess what? And your pet's illnesses might disappear.
Yeah, I like that. Well, thank you again for your time. So where can our audience learn more from you for like your website or social media?
Well, the best place to stay in touch is my Instagram. That's one of the most active. So it's at Paths of Bliss Hawaii, and you can send me messages with questions. My website is reflecting mostly my hands-on practice here in Kauai. I'm in the process of updating it to show more of that spiritual part of my work that I'm just tend to gravitate to. It's www.pathsofblisshawaii.com. I just recently started a YouTube channel. It's at Paths of Bliss Hawaii for Pets. So I'm about to add more videos. I want to talk about more animal communication and end-of-life transition, you know, this more spiritual aspects of having pets, as well as, you know, more practical ones like holistic vaccine protocols or nutrition. So just stay tuned. And hopefully there's going to be more to come.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll have all the links to her sites at the bottom of the episode, depending on where you're listening. So check that out. But yeah, this, once again, thank you so much for your time and your insight. This was such a great episode. And I learned a lot and I hope everyone else did too.
Mahala, it's been a pleasure. Yeah, thanks for having me. And I'm so glad to share the inspiration. If you can walk away feeling, you know, like a little lighter, a little happier, then we're doing great.
And don't forget to follow, subscribe, and leave reviews if you found this interview interesting so that we can help to reach more pet owners who might benefit from this information. Thank you once again for your time.
Thank you.